whether you're singing songs dressed as a traffic cone at the Ali Pali, roaring yourself hoarse on the first day of Cheltenham, or hugging a complete stranger after a 98th minute win. At Virgin Bet, we always want you to have a great time without ever losing track of your betting. So whilst there's no such thing as a dead cert, it's a good bet will help you keep it fun and safe. Visit our Safer Gambling Hub for more info. Virgin Bet, a good bet. Bet responsibly. 18 plus, gamblerware.org.
It's amazing to hear you're Jack Edwards. It's amazing to hear this coming out of your mouth. Afternoon, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Dropping the Gloves. Tim always smiles when I do my intro. I don't know why. It makes me nervous. But yeah, thanks for joining us here. We appreciate it. January 23rd. We're just getting crushed with snow here, Tim. How are you doing in North Carolina?
Yeah, we got almost an inch of snow, which is a lot of news around here. So like the roads, I was slipping and sliding the other night, but almost got into an accident. People don't know how to drive. And it's such like a cliche to say that they don't know how to drive in the snow in the South. But I realize it has less to do with their own driving and more to do with the decision making they do while driving. And so they see a gap, right? And they're like, oh, I'd pull out onto the street if I see there's room enough for me to flip between two cars. Yeah. They don't factor in the fact that it's downhill while it's snowing and icing and that sort of thing. So anyway, to answer your question, I'm good. Life is good.
Very good. Yeah. It was a good night last night. I was just relaxing at home, and all of a sudden I was watching some hockey games. Lots of interesting games happening last night, but the one I was keeping an eye on, Toronto Columbus, they just paid off early in the game. Huge fight. Absolutely monstrous fight, and I don't want to waste any time because it was arguably the top two heavyweights in the league. You know, you can throw Delorier in there, you can throw Ross DeBoss, Arbor Jack guy, you can throw a couple more guys in there, but it was Ryan Reeves and Matthew Olivier, two friends of the show. And they had, I don't want to undersell this. I was so excited I had to do an Instagram post. I don't usually do that, but I was so worked up about the fight. They had one of the most entertaining fights I've seen in a long, long time from heavyweights. Let me preface that. We've seen a lot of middleweights going at it this year and last year, and they're always entertaining. This was a throwback. This is, I think, what we've come to know from Matthew Olivier. And he was on the show. He said that. He's like, I'm there. I want to fight. I want to get punched in the face. I want to punch somebody in the face. He plays no defense. And it was fantastic. You were probably wincing and looking away from the TV because you don't like violence. And I get that. That's okay. But what did you think of this fight? Were you nervous for any of them? And who were you going for?
No, I like both those guys, obviously, two friends of the show. And it's interesting because I don't think I would have done this until doing this podcast. But I saw the fight. And I'm like, oh, this is great. First thing I do is look at the score and I look at like the clock. And I never really would have thought the situation. That's so important. It's one of the things I've learned from doing this. And it was like 3 minutes into the game and their fourth, third line player. So I assume it was their first shift. Obviously, it's 0-0. So there's nothing else about this fight except that these two guys just wanted to go at it. And they fought like it too. And one of those things too, like there's a lot of swinging, a lot of action. Reeves kind of tumbled early in the beginning. I think that was more of a balance thing than it was like reeling from a hit.
Yeah.
But you know, it's one of those things like, yes, there were a lot of hits thrown. Yes, a lot of them missed, but it was still enough of them connected. And just the two guys that were involved just made it a great fight. So yeah, I was kind of wondering if you would say, yeah, it was good, but sounds like you loved it.
It was a minute and a half into the game. So, you know, it was an offensive zone faceoff for the Toronto Maple Leafs, and good on Craig Berube to throw Ryan Reeves on the ice 1.5 minutes into the game in the offensive zone. He knew exactly what he was doing. He was setting the tone and getting him to fight Matthew Olivier early. And the reason this fight for me is different from a lot of other fights where there's not a lot of, you know, connection. Even I know here, I would say 85% of the punches did not connect. It's not because the guys were playing defense. It's just because they were both angry. They were both going at it and they were just throwing punches, and they're not, you know, they're not accurate. But when you look at the UFC, when you look at boxing, how many of those punches land flush? you know, when you look at the stat tracks after every fight for a big boxing match, it's usually 30% land, and the same for the UFC. The same holds true for hockey. It's very rare where you see a strike rate higher than 30%. So it was just an entertaining fight. I feel like, I think Olivier won the fight. If you were to go to the card, I think Olivier outpointed him, and he obviously got that slip slash takedown slash knockdown early on, and Reeves came back and carried the middle part of the fight, and then I think Olivier took over at the end. This was an important fight for Ryan Reeves, I feel like. His status in the league is wavering. I feel like people realize he's older, he's human, you know, the Superman cape is gone. People are taking runs at him. They don't respect him as much as they used to in years past. This meant more for him than it did for Matthew Olivier. He's there. Like, he is one of the top dogs, but I think Revo needed to just remind everybody how tough he is. And he did that. I don't think he wins the fight, but he comes out very, very close to winning this fight. And he kind of solidifies his spot in the upper echelon, and he reminds the Leafs and their fans and the management, like, hey, I am useful. And of course, they parlayed that into a terrible outing and lose 5-1 to the Columbus Blue Jackets. But Revo did his job. It was nice. It was a good fight. But again, it was kind of a pointless fight. Minute and a half in, there's really wasn't any, nothing on the line. And it didn't really change the outcome of the game other than they had a pretty hell of a tilt for everyone to watch.
Yeah, it's a good point about Reeves, that being a good fight for him. Just reminding people that he's still around. And I just pulled up hockey fights while you were talking. It's Olivier won the vote with 47%. Reeves had 23% and 30% called it a draw. Yeah. So, I mean, Olivia won, but yeah, it wasn't like, obviously, it wasn't super tilted or anything like that. It was a good fight. Two guys both walked away pretty fired up, and I'm sure the building was fired up too.
Yeah, entertainment value. I would put that out of 10, 7.3. That's kind of where it would land. It wasn't super duper entertaining just because, like we talked about earlier, not a ton landed, but it was two guys who were really trying their hardest to knock the other guy's block off. So. No, good fight. Good showing from the heavyweights. I enjoyed it. The East is enjoyable. Every night there's a matchup. Like tonight, Ottawa-Boston. I'm expecting fireworks. I want something, you know, to go down. But anyways, we were talking about, you know, cars and driving conditions earlier in the show in the snow. I wanted to touch on that a little bit. I have a Nissan NV 350 SL. It's a passenger van. It is a bus. It seats 12. It is just a tank. The only issue I've had, Tim, and you know this, the thing is terrible when it comes to anything slippery, any suspect conditions, the thing gets stuck, it slides off the road, it's a complete disaster, to the point this year, I've had to park a quarter of a mile from my house and walk up a hill just to get home, and I've done that the whole winter, because I don't want to have to dig it out, I don't want to have to, you know, try to get up the hill and get 3/4 of the way up and then slide all the way down and be like cranking the wheel left and right. And then you get it stuck in the ditch and I'm cursing and I'm digging it out and it's just a disaster. So I've resigned myself like a wimp to parking at the bottom of my hill and walking literally a quarter of a mile up to my house in the cold and snow. What are you laughing at?
Well, okay. So just to give people a size, if they don't know it, obviously you can go look it up, but this thing is so big that at the hotel, at the GLI,
yeah,
we all do valet parking, but John has to park like out in the driveway of the hotel, yeah, rather than in the garage like everyone else. This thing's a beast. And I know why you need something that big, obviously with your family, but it's just funny imagining that you live on a curvy, windy, dirt road hill in northern Michigan, and you have a vehicle that can't handle anything close to that. So that's why I'm laughing.
So we thought. And this is the one good thing that's happened in my life in the last couple of weeks. I've had a crappy couple of weeks. This is a silver lining, but it's also like an aha moment for my wife, where I'm like, damn it. When I got the tires put on the van when we first bought it, I got the tires acknowledging that we were going to have to get up this hill. So I go to the Nissan dealership, right? You go to where the truck was made, Nissan. I know it's a little more expensive, but that's how I was living back then. Not anymore. The guy at the dealership goes, oh, we use these tires on all our vehicles, our service vehicles. They're bulletproof. They're good for every condition you put them in. Snow, dirt, rain, sleet, hail, whatever. These things are the best. And I go, okay, should I put snow tires on in the winter? No, these things are rock solid. I'm like, okay, sounds good. The first winter, could not get up the hill. I put about 400 or 500 pounds in the back of the van, traction control turned off. I still had to salt the driveway and shovel it. I was still getting stuck. Second year, same thing. This is my third year with this vehicle at this house. And my wife's like, just go get snow tires. Like, we really need them. And the reason that preempted this was we're going out of town next week and we're having a babysitter to watch the kids for the weekend for 2 nights. And she's like, she needs to drive the big van. We need to put some snow tires on it. Just, you know, go and do it. So I crack open the wallet, which I hate to do, go to Junior's Tires. My buddy owns it. And I'm like, give me some snow tires. And while I'm getting the tires on, he's like, oh, these will be way better than the tires you currently have. And this is where I'm ignorant. I'm an idiot. I didn't realize there was a difference in rubber. There was a difference in anything. I just assumed the guy at the dealership would shoot me straight. But I know now that he didn't have these tires and he wanted to put some tires on my car that they had so they could make some money. So I get these snow tires on. It's changed my life. I literally could crawl up that hill driving super duper slow in the snow. And we've been getting just hammered with snow the last week and a half. That van just glides up like nothing. It's amazing. It's absolutely amazing. Even my wife can get up the driveway. And she's a woman.
Going down too, like you're not sliding, you're going down,
not sliding. It's crazy. So everybody can laugh at me. I'm just like, it's crazy. One little change, one minor change was the missing piece for my life, because now it's smooth sailing. I can drive the small, you know, sports car that we have, the Toyota Sienna, and she can drive the big van and haul all the kids. It's just fantastic. It's funny how one little change, Tim, can change everything. It can change the trajectory of your life. Because I was headed for a divorce. I was headed for just this, it just a dire straits, because we would get in constant fights, my wife and I. But it's a beautiful thing. And it got me thinking, what little changes could hockey teams make to change their trajectory or to give them a little boost? Because we've seen it already. Montreal Canadiens, month and a half ago, they were mired. They were bottom of the Atlantic Division. Another rebuild year. What do we do with Marty St. Louis? How do we get rid of these guys? They're talking about offloading their forwards, some defensemen. All of a sudden, Patrick Laine comes back into the lineup. He was hurt in preseason. He comes back. Since he's returned, they're the second best team in the league. They've gone 16-6-1. They've jumped back into the wild card. They are contender. They're the hottest team in the NHL. They're balanced. He's been lighting the score sheet on fire. I think he's got 12 or 13, 14 goals in 16 games or whatever. They've been playing tremendous hockey. And then you look in the West, the Colorado Avalanche. Same thing. Mired in inconsistency. Can't really get a good winning streak going. What do we do? Is the window closed for these young guys? Are we ever going to, you know, be a dynasty like we thought we were going to be with Landeskog and Rantanen, McKinnon and Makar and Taves and all these guys? Well, lo and behold, they go out and they pick up Mackenzie Blackwood. Kind of a mid-tier goalie, but a guy who is just, you know, solid. He's been playing fantastic hockey for the Colorado Avalanche, who, by the way, were getting just garbage goaltending from Scott Wedgwood and the other guy they had. It's terrible. And now Mackenzie Blackwood's come in, and he's been the second best goalie in the league since he's been there. He's about .925 save percentage, 2.04 goals against average. Completely turned around the Avalanche. They're now in the playoffs, and they're a threat like we thought they were. So now Tim and I start talking. What do teams need? What do teams need maybe to put them over the edge, to give them that little boost to make the playoffs, or if you're a contender, to make the Stanley Cup, to win the Stanley Cup? So Tim took the West. I took the East. In each team, we have maybe one or two people or changes that are missing to make this team a true contender, or to maybe give them that little boost that they need to get into the playoffs, to be a threat when we thought maybe they were just a lottery team. All right, I'll start, Tim, unless you want to touch on something.
No, go for it. Let's do it. Actually, I'll add one thing. There's a weird little caveat, just because we're talking about some of the trades these teams should make, and we don't really know who the sellers are yet. We have opinions on who the sellers should be, obviously, and some teams are already saying it, like the Penguins, but other teams probably should be. They're not, and so there's not a lot of teams to trade from just yet. Just wanted to point that out.
That's a very good caveat. I'm glad you pointed that out. My first team, Tampa Bay Lightning. Third in the Atlantic. You know, big changes this offseason. Walked away from their captain, Steven Stamkos, in not a very fun way. Unceremoniously kicked them out the door. replaced him with Jake Gensel, moved away from Sergachev, brought in friend of the show, Ryan McDonough. So they had some transition. They replaced some pieces, but they still have issues. They need depth on their defense. Eric Chernock, he's been out, but he's been bad when he's been in. He hasn't been the guy that, you know, was the shotgun next to Hedman when they were winning Stanley Cups a couple years ago. He's been very, very bad. Not very, very bad, but pretty bad. J.J. Moser, he's been hurt. With those two guys out, they've been big time exposed. Like, big time exposed. What is it? Matthews walked one of the young kids earlier this week and went in and buried one. So they need some defensive depth. They need some depth at scoring two up front, but I think they're pretty solid with their top two lines. They brought in, who'd they bring in? Atkinson. They brought in Gergensen. They brought in Glenn Danning. They have that young kid, Geeky. So they have something there. I think the pressing need is on the back end. And I have two guys who would be great for this team. Friend of the show, Mario Ferrara from the San Jose Sharks. He doesn't get talked about a lot. Just because he's playing in San Jose, they're just kind of mired in the West. No one really focuses on them very much. He's 26. He has 1 year left on his deal. He's a pretty good puck mover, and he eats a ton of minutes. I feel like if he went to a situation where the team was good, pretty much, you know, when he didn't have to play every minute of his ice time in the D zone, you would see the potential that this kid has, because he has been pretty much playing on his heels his whole career. He hasn't been on a team that's just been a run and gun, an offensive team, offensive zone time starts, where you can see the skill and the potential that this kid has. He's got $3.25 million on his salary, 1 year left, and I feel like the Sharks would trade him. I feel like he's a gettable guy. Another guy that I think would be good with the Tampa Bay Lightning is Ivan Provorov, Columbus Blue Jackets. This is tricky because Columbus is in a position now where they're, like you said, they're a contender. They got the first wild card spot, but Provorov is on an expiring contract. Are they going to keep him long term? We don't know. The beautiful thing with him, the guy just eats minutes. Great on the penalty kill. Not a big offensive defenseman, but he would be so good in Tampa Bay. They don't need a power play guy. They got Victor Hedman. They don't need a puck mover. They got Ryan McDonough. You could put him alongside either one of those guys. That's locked in. Boom. First pairing, Hedman, Provorov. Second pairing, McDonough, Provorov. And you can just set it and forget it. So if they want to make a big deal and make a splash, which I think they can, these two guys would be perfect for this team. And they would instantly vault them, Tim, in my eyes, to maybe the most lethal team in the East. They're very close. They got it between the pipes. They have the high-end talent up front. They just need a couple pieces on the back end. So there you go. Are you listening, like Julian Brisebois? Are you listening?
Yeah, those are two good names. And they're very different defensemen.
Yes.
Provorov is kind of an offensive first guy. He just hasn't put up numbers in a couple of years. But he was at one point with the Flyers. And I think he probably runs a second power play unit if you picked him up. He's prone to the turnovers and being out of position from time to time. But Ferrara, on the other hand, is like a stay-at-home, shot-blocking, body-slamming defenseman. But I think you're right. Like, this kid's potential is more than he has been. If you put him on a good team where he's not hemmed in, where he's not targeted against the top lines every single night, I think he could give you a little bit more. So, yeah, different players, but kind of addressing the same need on the back end. So I like.
Why do I think Provorov is like a more defensive defenseman and not this puck mover like you think he is?
I don't know. I'm pretty sure.
All right, maybe I'm wrong. I apologize. Yeah, I was just maybe confused with somebody else, but I still think he'd be a good get. You just shat all over my argument there. Thank you.
It's nice. They're still both good gets.
All right, who do you got, Tim, in the West?
Yeah, I'll go with Minnesota first. And this is kind of a weird one because, yes, they're one of the better teams in the league, certainly the West, but their window for contention doesn't really open until next year because of the salaries coming off their books. We talked about the cap penalty. But I still think they're good enough this year to be, you know, a team looking to add at the deadline if they can make it work. They have a great depth out front. You're getting some really solid goaltending from guys between the pipes. I think the defense is the strong point of this team, but it's still something I'd like to see them address going into the trade deadline. Because right now they're relying super, super heavily on their top guys. Starting with Brock Faber, this kid is logging 25 minutes a night. 25.03 is his average time on ice. Now, you obviously can rely on him in the playoffs. You're going to need him to do that in the playoffs. But asking him to do it every night, especially in the regular season, is a lot. Even at that age, that can really wear you down. And I want him ready to go. And I want to take a little bit of pressure off him where I don't need 25 minutes from him in order to win a game. Right behind him, Brodin's lugging 23 and change. Middleton's 21. Spurgeon's 20. I'd rather see those numbers come down just a little bit, and just another guy that can come into your top four, maybe even a 5-6, that can just situationally take some of the pressure off these guys that are logging a ton of minutes. Because I don't want 17.5 from a kid I never heard of, Declan Chisholm, Zach Bogosian at this time in his career, logging almost 17 minutes a game. Like, I just don't need that. We also know that defense is one of those positions that you always want to add at the deadline because guys always get hurt. And not for nothing, I hate using the term injury prone, but guys like Spurgeon and Brodin, these are guys who have missed serious time in the last couple of years to injury. So I want to hedge my bet a little bit. The tough part with this is Minnesota has basically no cap room. They have like less than 100 grand in cap room. So you're going to have to do some finagling and wait to see what happens. Maybe there's an LTIR situation, maybe just a regular move like that, an IR, and you open up some cap space. A lot of things can happen. You can make some things work. I also know that there are some teams that would love to flip a defenseman on an expiring contract. They're not going to resign. And yeah, we'll eat, you know, $2 million in cap space if you give us a third round pick or something. So I think there's some finagling to do there. So these guys I'm going to list off aren't super sexy. This is probably the more boring of the three that I'm going to do. But I just want to get a guy that can give me 20 minutes if I need him to, play a reliable, simple game, take pressure off the Brodeens and Spurgeons and Favors of the world. So throw some names at you, all from teams that should be selling at the deadline. Brian Dumoulin from Anaheim, he makes 3.15. He's logging just shy of 20 minutes a night. He's on an expiring contract. He's just a steady Eddie defenseman, one of the better guys at that in the league, if you don't expect too much from him. Alec Martinez, he's 37 years old. So this one's a little bit tough because I said you don't want too much from Bogosian at his age, and he's younger than that. But Martinez is a winner. He's a really good locker room guy. He's making $4 million. He's averaging 19 minutes and 55 seconds a night. Let's call that 20. Also on an expiring contract. Jan Ruda, not a sexy name at all. He's on the San Jose Sharks, so he's not like Ferraro. He's being pinned in his own zone a lot. He's getting a lot of defensive zone starts, that sort of thing. Super cheap, 2.75, logging 17 minutes a night, again on expiring contract. And the Matt one, my good old friend Matt Grizzlick on Pittsburgh, who will, you know, unofficially have declared that they are open for business. He's making 2.75. He's logging over 20 minutes a night on an expiring contract. These are just insurance pickups, but I'd love to see them pick these guys up and not have to know that either Bogosian or John Merrill, those guys are in the lineup every night. I want to bolster that back end just a little bit more.
I'll tell you right now, I'm not going to dump on your little segment there. But they got it. They have that guy in-house. Remember that trade they made with the Columbus Blue Jackets earlier this season? They got David Yerichek.
Yerichek, yeah.
He just started playing. First game was January 9th with Minnesota. He's played the last six games. He's looked pretty solid. You know, they're just shielding him a little bit. I think it's 15 minutes, 13 minutes they're giving him. That will increase. This kid is good.
Big, I hope it big does.
Body. 6'4", 210. This kid will be the difference on this back end. He'll slide right in their top four. Just give him some time. I think Zach Bogosian will slide down to the bottom six. I don't mind it, but I feel like that's an in-house fix that the Minnesota Wild will just pull out. And they already have. It's gonna be nice. So he's gonna be a big piece for this team. Then you got Faber, Middleton, Spurgeon. I don't mind this roster. But yeah, I like where your head's at, Tim, even though it's wrong. Like I was wrong.
Yeah. I hope it's in-house. Jiracek's a young stud. But like I said, next year is the year where we take this really seriously. If you're going to make a move, you make a little one like that.
Do you, though? And that's always the big question mark for a GM. It's like when to go all in, because things change from year to year. You look at teams like the New Jersey Devils, who I'm going to get to next. 1 year, a Stanley Cup contender. The next year, you're down in the bottom of the league. And that happens every single year. Look at the Nashville Predators, where you feel like, okay, this is the year we're going all in. And then you suck. We're already midway through this season. The Wild are playing fantastic. Why would you not capitalize on that and try to go instill in the players that I believe in you? And we're not saving it for next year, because who knows what's happened.
But you don't have any cap room. That's the problem. So you're not making any
trade
any
draft picks. You got to make, you can make stuff work. You can get solid players, especially nowadays. It seems like GMs are a little more stingy with trading draft picks unless you're Julien Brisebois. So you could go out there and get some talent. But anyways, we'll see what happens. My second team, Tim, like I just said, cats out of the bag, New Jersey Devils. They're third in the Metro. And Tim actually brought this to my attention because he watched the Bruins game last night when they just got absolutely manhandled, and it was not even a close game.
Whether you're screaming from the stands or the sofa, Virgin Bet has even more for you to shout about this season, because we're giving you a totally free bet builder on a selected football match every week this season. So get ready to make some noise. Join us and claim your bet builder free bet every week. Virgin Bet, a good bet. Use Bet Builder free bet on selected match by kickoff. Min odds evens. Max one free bet, £1 to £20. Except via pop-up. T's and C's apply. 18 plus. Bet responsibly. Gamblerware.org.
And the Devils worked them from the start to the finish. And the only dangerous player, by the way, that the Bruins have is Pastrnak. Other than that, they're completely just useless. They're a bad team. Anyways, the New Jersey Devils. Jacob Markstrom went down. Brazeau on a 2-on-1, slid into him. From first glance, looked bad. Like it looks like he is out for a long time. His left leg got just wrenched on that post. So from an outside perspective, he's on the IR for an extended period of time. That frees up some cap space. Eric Hall has been out with an ankle injury. I think Palat was sick yesterday. So they have some guys out of the lineup. They will have some money to play with. But when I'm looking at this roster, it doesn't look like they need much. Much like Tampa Bay Lightning, they're pretty solid top to bottom. Now, Markstrom changes things. Do you go out and get a goalie? I'm not gonna bite on that until I know the status of him, because that changes things. But they bring in Pesci. Markstrom shores up the goaltending ranks. I think their defense is very, very solid. I think they need some help on the wing. I think they need some depth scoring, much like a lot of teams. I think New Jersey has a luxury of having some superstars up front. You have Jack Hughes. You bring in Timo Meier 2 years ago. You have Palat. You have their captain, Hirschier. You got Jesper Bratt. You're set for scoring. You need some just meat and potatoes guys. You need some veteran presence in the bottom six wingers, maybe third line winger. Who makes sense for me? And this is going to shock. And it might shock a lot of people. Brock Nelson. This guy is sitting, waiting with the New York Islanders. He can play center. He's the assistant captain there. He's been there his whole career. I think he's 33, 34 years old. So he knows nothing else than playing on the island. I think he makes a lot of sense with the New Jersey Devils. Still on the East Coast, very familiar with the team. But the guy does everything to him. And he is very motivated to win. Talk about a vet you can rally around. Talk about a guy you can put him in any situation. I know it's very cliche to say that, but I would trust Brock Nelson to take the last draw of the game. I would trust him, if we're down a goal, to go and get that goal. I would trust him to hound the other team's best player throughout the game and get that defensive job done. I feel like he can do a lot of things. He's a big body. You can rely on him in the playoffs. And it just makes a lot of sense for this New Jersey Devil team. You don't have to tax him with a ton of minutes. You know, shield him. 15 minutes, second power play. That's a perfect spot for Brock Nelson, and he would just check a lot of boxes that this team needs. Does Lou Lamoriello have the chutzpah to make this deal? Probably not. But it would make a lot of sense for both teams to get this deal done, because the Islanders on the other page, they want some reset. They need some fresh blood to go over there, and it just makes a lot of sense to make this deal.
I like that one. I'm going to be talking about Nelson too for one of mine. He's got an expiring contract, like you said. Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. I just wonder if, we talked about him being one of the more underrated guys, but if you're the Islanders, you want to trade him in division right down the road. Yes, he's on an expiring deal, but he might re-sign there if he fits in well, and then you got to play against him for the next 6 years. So that could be one of those things they don't trade too close to home, but I think on paper it makes a lot of sense.
Thanks, Tim. I appreciate that.
Okay. Sorry, John. That was a great point. That was a great Thank point. You. And you look great today.
Who do you got next?
The Las Vegas Golden Knights. So this is a team that we have not really spent hardly any time on. We've talked about them really not at all. Even though they're first in the Pacific, they're playing well. They're loaded on the back end. They already had Petrangelo. They already had Shea Theodore. They picked up Hanifin last season at the deadline. They have their number one goalie in Aiden Hill. They made that clear when they got rid of Logan Thompson. And they have great, 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 great center depth. Jack Eichel, obviously a stud. Hurdle playing very well. William Karlsson is a third line center. That's how good. And they can balance that out. He can also play wing. But right now he's centering the third line. Nicholas Roy's on your fourth line. You also have guys on the wing that can play center situationally, like a Barbashev. So you're really strong at the middle and the back end. You're strong in net. I think if you're looking at like holes in this lineup, they don't have many scoring wingers. We'll put Barbashev in there because he's playing wing now. Obviously, Mark Stone is great. He missed some time, but he's obviously an elite scoring winger. And after that, it gets real thin. The Victor Olofssons of the world. There's not a lot of guys that are available to be a scoring threat on the wing, on the power play, any situation, that sort of thing. And obviously, Mark Stone should be on the LTIR until playoffs, I would say any week now. So that's going to open up some cap space for the third year in a row. So I'm just looking at some guys on bad teams that can be really good wingers. And there's two guys that I have in mind. First is in their division. That's Granlin from the San Jose Sharks. He has been really, really good for them since being traded. He's making $5 million. He's on an expiring contract. He has 40 points in 48 games on a team that doesn't score a ton of goals. If I'm on Sharks, I probably don't even trade him. Like, I want him bridging that next generation because he's just a great guy to have around and in that lineup and just do a lot of little things, kind of like a Brock Nelson type. But if I'm Vegas, I'd love to pick him up and have him on the wing for the playoff run. The second guy, go ahead, John.
What? No, go ahead. Finish it up.
Okay. The second guy is one who has been there before. Bring him home, Alex Tuch. Buffalo is just, obviously, they're arguably top three or bottom three, bottom five team in the league. Tuch makes 4.75. He's got 2 years left. He's got 34 points in 47 games, so not quite putting up the offensive numbers that he was a couple of years ago. Bring him home. He's a beast in the playoffs. He'd be a great fit there. We know that he has gotten along with these guys before, so if you need some scoring wingers, you're looking at the bottom teams in the league. There's some familiarity there, so I'd love to bring in either Tuch or Granlin to add to the wings.
Why do we always ignore the Vegas Golden Knights?
Right?
It's just so bizarre. Year after year after year, they had one down year, but other than that, they've been top of the West or darn near close to it every single season. Everybody just sleeps on them. I don't understand why. And when you look at this roster and you look at what their GM has done, this is probably one of the most exciting, consistent teams the NHL has over the last 10 years. And there's no reason for us to ignore them. They have a solid lineup. They really, really do. And with Thomas Hertl, I think he's going to be the X factor this year for this team. You know, he's comfortable. Last year, maybe he didn't have the biggest splash that he wanted to coming off that injury. He looks good. And the team looks really, really solid. But I think you nailed it. If they can land one of those players, that would be absolutely incredible. But boy, oh boy, if they go into the playoffs as is, pretty solid team. Like, pretty, pretty solid team. I think they have decent goaltenders who can get the job done. Obviously, Aiden Hill been there, done that. But this is it's a dangerous team. And I completely forget about them. I apologize to all the Vegas fans who listen. We should talk more about this team because they're fun.
I agree.
And they just, there's really not a lot of weaknesses. All of their forwards are all responsible. They play the game the right way, but they have high-end offensive talent. And remember when I said Barbashev was going to be the star of the playoffs, and he was? It's just fun that I'm right. I just wanted to bring that up. Okay. My last team, Columbus Blue Jackets. How did we get here? This team, obviously the tragedy, Johnny Gaudreau dies in the offseason. You trade Patrick Laine. Two of arguably your best players are gone. This season was supposed to be a wash. It was almost supposed to be a memorial to Johnny, kind of get through it, do the best we can, try, but in the end, we're just not going to win. Well, don't tell the team that. They went out, they got Sean Monahan, they gave other guys some chances. You know, Marchenko's playing fantastic, friend of the show. Adam Fantilli is taking the next step. Matthew Olivier's playing really, really good. Zach Werenski is not so quietly jumped into the Norris conversation. He's been playing lights out all season long in whatever situation you put him in. And this team is in the first wildcard spot in a very tightly contested Eastern Conference. So this changes day to day, but as it is today, year of our Lord, 2025, January 23rd, they are in the first wildcard spot. And they're 7-2-1 in their last 10, Tim. They're playing great, great hockey. They just waxed the Maple Leafs last night in Toronto to boot. So what do they need? They need a top six forward. They need some high-end talent. The two guys who I mentioned are not there anymore. So they could inject some skill up front. Yeah. And this is a team, Tim, that's very finicky. Finicky in a good way because they play hard. Everybody's pulling on the rope. So it's not a situation where you can just go and, you know, grab a superstar and throw him in the mix. I don't think that would work. I think that would ruffle the feathers. I think it would ruin the mojo that this team has. So you have to be very careful who you add to this mix. And I know this is low-hanging fruit, and his name's been bandied about with every team in the NHL. But in my eyes, JT Miller fits perfectly on this team. His personality, the way he plays the game, his leadership, intangibles, all of those things gel really well with the way this team's playing this year. I think he would be a seamless fit for this team. And he would just put them over the top, not to the point of Stanley Cup, but to a point of, holy crap, this team is a team to be reckoned with in years moving forward, because he is signed on for a long time. So this isn't just a rental, but I feel like JT Miller makes a ton of sense for this Columbus Blue Jackets team. And if it's not him, I'm going to look to two guys who are on the Vancouver Canucks and who used to be on the Vancouver Canucks. Elias Lindholm from the Boston Bruins. Because I don't care what you say, the Bruins are sellers, or they should be. That team is terrible. And then the Brock Besser situation. You think Besser's going to want to go back to Vancouver after just the circus and the drama that's been on this team for his whole career? Every single year, this guy is on the trading block. Every single year, his name is being thrown about. And every single year, there's coaching changes, there's presidential changes, there's drama within the room. He is sprinting out of Vancouver at the end of this season. Absolutely gone. My guess is he goes to Minnesota, but that's a whole other show for a whole other, you know.
Ooh, that's a great fit. Topic. I like that.
So go get Brock Besser. He is one of the best right wingers out there. He is a surefire goal every other game, if not every game, if you put him in the right situation. And he's just got a lethal shot. He'd be terrific for this power play. So if you can't get JT Miller, go after Elias Lindholm or Brock Besser. They'll be perfect in Columbus. So I like it. I think that would, and they got a ton of money, Tim, to spend. I think they have over $15 million in cap space. So it makes, and it'll be good for just the morale in Columbus. You know, we're going for it. I think that would be a nice fit for team and player.
I like that. I like that. That kind of ties in nicely with my last one here in the West, the Winnipeg Jets. And it's rare that you have a team that's at the top of the standings, but also has a lot of cap space to play with. And they're going to have about $5.5 million right now. You have arguably the best goalie in the world. You have an elite defense. You have a ton of great scoring wingers. Ehlers, Kyle Connor, Iafallo, Vilardi, even down to like the Niederreiters of the world. But you really only have one legit star top center in the Mark Scheifele. I know Adam Lowry, who's week to week, he got hurt the other night. He's a great top six center, but I'd really love him as my third line center if I'm competing for a cup. I want another scoring center up there. But you don't have it. You don't have it on the roster. So there's three guys I would look at making a move for. Go out, get a legit number two scoring center. We mentioned one already. That's Brock Nelson. I think he'd be perfect fit for that. He slides right in there. He'd be great at it. The next name I throw out is a name who's been tossed around on the trade market, and he's kind of said that he wants to stay where he is, but that's Ryan O'Reilly. He's got 3 years left at $4.5 million. He can do everything we know. He's a winner. He's won before. I'd love to see him, you know, play on a line with some of those guys, Connor and Ehlers or something.
Oh, yeah.
And the third one, and this is a blockbuster. This is a little bit of a, you know, head in the clouds type of move. But if we're looking at teams that probably need to shake things up, it's the Buffalo Sabres. I'm asking about Dylan Cousins. He would be perfect in Winnipeg. He's in year two of a 7-year deal at $7.1 million. He can score. He can fight. He throws his weight around. He's the type of guy that you want to lock up long-term and build around, but something's not right in the water in Buffalo, and you've already got other pieces that you've kind of hitched your cart to, the Dahlins of the world, the Owen Powers, and some of these other guys. So this is probably a little pie in the sky, but I would love for it to happen, and I think teams are going to be calling. So if you can go out and get a Dylan Cousins, you do that. The one other thing I'll add on that, I was going to make a line earlier when I was preparing for the show about how moving to Winnipeg gets him closer to UConn. It barely does. Canada is so friggin' big. It is like, it's still 1,000 miles away plus from Whitehorse, but still pretty cool.
So out of those three, who would you want the most if you're Kevin Cheveldayoff? Because you have like Dylan Cousins is such a strange enigma. He's still young. He's 23 years old and he's already got, gosh, probably 300 plus games under his belt, but he has shown flashes, you know, last year, 18 goals, but the year before that, 31. Like, who is this kid? Because this year he's having a down year. He brings a lot of nice intangibles, you know, responsible. He hits, he's going to, you know, get his nose dirty. When he was on the show, he said he likes that type of game. Or do you want a Ryan O'Reilly, who's been there, done that, Stanley Cup champ, much like Brock Nelson. You can trust that guy in every situation, but he's old and he's got 3 years left on his deal. So I don't know. And it's not like they can be just pick and choose what you want. But if you're Kevin Cheveldayoff, who do you take, Tim, of those three?
Yeah, I love the Dylan Cousins move. I think there's so much about it that's really exciting. But let's just use Ryan O'Reilly as an example. I feel like what you're getting from him beyond just his play on the ice makes him really valuable, especially from a team. Maybe there's no fire to the smoke, but we've had a lot of questions in the last 3 years about Winnipeg's locker room and leadership group, and they've stuck to their guys. They've stuck to Scheifele and Morrissey and Hellebuck and all the guys that maybe we had questions about. So maybe those things aren't super founded, but I really like Ryan O'Reilly for that reason. And I feel like he's the kind of guy that can put you over the top on the ice and off the ice. So you can't go wrong with any of the three guys that I mentioned, but if I'm picking one, it's Ryan O'Reilly.
It's crazy he only signed for 4.5. I just don't understand how he gave Nashville that big of a team-friendly deal. And he has no contingencies on his contract. No partial move clause, no full move clause. Like, that is so rare these days when you see a player not have any of those on their contract. When you look at, you know, Nashville, Forsberg has a full new move clause, Stamkos full no move clause, Marchessault full no move clause. Like, if you're a star player, that's a given as soon as you start negotiating a contract. So it's rare. I don't know what happened last year when he signed that deal, or 2 years ago. It just is strange. But yeah, Nashville, they have a huge asset in Ryan O'Reilly, because team salivate for guys like him. Doesn't wear a visor. Love that. Like, I would be going after him if I was any GM with any common sense. Go get Ryan O'Reilly. The guy's a stud. All right. Anything else, Tim?
We have some quick hits, but we kind of already covered it. So Markstrom went down last night with a little impact with Brageau. Keith said, quote, he's going to miss some time. No timetable yet, but we're talking weeks, maybe months. It's not going to be short. Most likely.
Years.
Maybe. And then I just wanted to add, and at some point we're going to have to spend some time on this, but the Bruins obviously lost 5-1. They now have the second to worst goal differential in the entire East. Not their division, not playoff teams, all of the Eastern teams with -24. So this is not a good hockey team. And I think I'm officially on team sell. Even if we sneak into the wild card, you move some pieces and you start the retool now.
Yeah. It's just funny hearing you say that in such like a optimistic way, moving some pieces. They don't have no pieces. Nobody wants any of these trash, these garbage players.
Yes.
It's just, okay, let's trade Elias Lindholm. Oh, yeah, okay, that sounds good. The guy signed to 2031 for $7.75 million.
He's not going anywhere.
Who's
going
to take on that contract?
Nobody. He's not one of the names. You trade Marchand, which is going to hurt. You look at trading Coyle, if you can find a partner for him. Trent Frederick, we know teams are already calling about. I really like Brandon Carlo, but I would explore that. And then Korpisalo is an affordable goalie who's played pretty well on a good team. There's guys that want that number two or even a 1B goalie that can split the workload and play in front of a good team. He's a good goalie. He's a solid goalie. So
it's amazing to hear you're Jack Edwards. It's amazing to hear this coming out of your mouth. Korpisalo would get you a sixth rounder, maybe seventh rounder.
I want him off the books.
What would you get for Brad Marchand? A third, fourth rounder?
I don't know. I think there's more than that, but
no. The only guy who
former John.
Tim, stop. Jake Gensel, I think, was a second rounder last year.
He was unsigned, though. He was unsigned.
Okay. Marchand's unsigned. So you think you're going to get a ton for him? The one guy who I think you could get some money for is Brandon Carlo. He's the one guy. I like the way he plays, but he's got concussion history and he's prone to kind of make stupid mistakes at times. But I like him as a defenseman. Other than that, you're just grasping at straws. Unless you deal Pasternak and you really want to reset the whole system.
No, you don't move Pasternak or McAvoy or Swayman. Everyone else is up for grabs. And I'm not saying that like you're going to go get a ton for them, but I want them off the books. I want to free up some roster space to test out some of the Providence guys. I want to free up cap space to have room to maneuver in the offseason, because clearly these pieces aren't working and we got to get a little bit younger and a little bit more skilled. it's not going to be pretty, but it's either that or what? Like, there's no scenario where they win a cup in the next 3-4 years. So that's where you have to
just keep going up. Like 3-4, are you crazy? That's like 10 to 12 years until this team is going to see a cup. They are on the downward slope, and it's been a long time coming. This should have happened last year. I think they did something right last year, and they just managed to get some wins under their belt. This was it. This was what I was talking about last year, when this team is going to fall off, and it's here. It's here. They looked outclassed last night. They looked absolutely outclassed to a Columbus Blue Jackets team. They have no business being outclassed by it. Like, seriously.
The Devils. But
New Jersey Devils, excuse me. Yeah. It was just like, it was night and day how bad the Bruins were and how good the Devils looked. Other than Pasta. Pasta looked good. Boy. It's gonna be a tough couple of years for the Bruins fans, because they suck and they ain't getting better. And Swayman, I want 11. I'm gonna hold out. He's a friend of the show. He's played very pedestrian. Why did he get pulled after the second period?
I don't know. I don't know.
No answer. Okay, that's good.
All right, everybody.
Go ahead.
My fandom is not what it was, partly because of who they are and just not being that good anymore, and partly because we cover all these teams, and I don't spend that much time watching the Bruins more than any other team anymore. So, sad fact.
Oh, I watch them, and they look terrible. Mason Lowry, Peak, Carlo, even Zadorov. He gets so many chances, Zadorov, and he never scores. You notice that? He has good instincts to jump up in the rush. His timing is perfect. Can't finish. He's just a big boy. I get that. But boy, if he had any sort of scoring sense, he would put up 15 to 20 goals a year, because it seems like every game he gets a grade A chance. He's got 2 goals this year. 2. So, I don't know.
Yeah, we didn't sign him to put up points, but yeah, I agree.
Like, I got 3 goals 1 year. Just saying. All right, I think that's all, Tim. Anything else?
No, that's it. Thanks for being here, and have a great weekend.
Yeah, go out there, have some fun. We'll talk to you guys next week. Cheers.
What makes a good bet? At Virgin Bet, we think it's a simple bet, a responsible bet, a last-minute winner when you're down to 10 men kind of bet, with generous offers. A bet that puts sport first. Sound like your kind of bet? Then you're ready to get started. Sign up and get £20 in free bets when you bet £10 on sports. Virgin Bet, a good bet.
New members, min bet settled in first 14 days, 1.5 minimum odds. Free bets valid 7 days on sports. T's and C's and exclusions apply. Bet responsibly. 18+, gamblerware.org.